Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm attorney Edward Robinson from the law firm of Cannon and Dunphy, and it's my privilege to represent the petitioners in this case. I appreciate the opportunity to be heard, and I hope over the next hour we can have a friendly and informative discussion.
We're going to try.
We will try. I will do my part.
Always the case here.
But hopefully we can have an informative discussion about the issue that's presently before this court. The court is obviously well-versed in the briefs that have been filed and knows, therefore, that the issue before the court is under what circumstances is excess liability coverage available under your own policy when you may cause an accident while you're driving someone else's car who's not a resident of your household, if that car is made available for your regular use. In this case, the Court of Appeals determined that coverage was not available under Eric Johnson's policy, the son's policy, and allowed American Family to invoke its regular use exclusion to preclude coverage. And we submit that the Court of Appeals erred in four respects, and I'm going to discuss them in greater detail, but briefly, these are: one, the Court of Appeals, keep hearing some feedback, I apologize. The Court of Appeals decision.
Your fault, counsel. Just proceed.
The Court of Appeals in this case ignored fundamental rules of insurance contract construction, which basically sets forth a three-part process in determining whether coverage is available. The first step is to determine if there's a grant of coverage under the policy. If there is no grant of coverage, that ends the analysis. If there is a grant of coverage, the next step is to see if that broad grant of coverage is taken away by an exclusion that might be present in the policy. The final step, even though there may be an exclusion that, if applied, or if allowed to apply, it would take away coverage, the final step is to determine whether that exclusion violates any public policy as set forth by the court, or a statute, some statute setting forth the legislature's public policy. And in this case, the Court of Appeals blurred the first two steps together and put the proverbial cart before the horse. So before turning to the statute to determine if the regular use exclusion violated the statute, it gave effect to the statute in the first instance. So that's the first error. The second error, which is closely related to that, is that the Court of Appeals analysis of the 631.43, the stacking claim, ignores well-established methodology that's been set forth by this court as well as its own prior decisions, which have indicated that in looking at whether the statute applies in a given case, you look at the grant of coverage, you put aside any exclusion, you look to see if there are two policies that both provide coverage. Is there a grant of coverage under two or more policies, putting aside any exclusion? If so, and then under the statute, you look at the exclusion and you try to reconcile the exclusion with the statute to determine if it can be given effect.
Counsel, I need. I'll let you get to you. You have three or four, you said.
I will be brief. Okay. The third reason is that the third way in which we are submitting the Court of Appeals error is because its decision in this case is contrary to every prior decision of this court and the Court of Appeals that has looked at 631.43 and reducing clause or regular use exclusions. There's a whole line of cases that we've set forth. I won't go through them in detail here, but five or six prior cases all undertook the analysis under 631.43. They said there is a grant of coverage. There are two policies here that apply, but the drive of the car exclusion cannot be given effect, or the regular use exclusion cannot be given effect. To affirm the Court of Appeals' decision in this case would require this court to overrule all of those prior decisions.
Counsel, I don't want to jump ahead because I think you've laid it out very well, but I just want to, when you buy insurance, you buy it and you pay a certain amount of money for that money, you assume company. but assume a certain risk. Now here, it seems to me you have the exclusion, which excluded coverage while he was allegedly driving his father's truck. It was for regular use. That the statute says when two or more policies promise to indemnify an insured against the same loss. I'm reading 631. And what was the same loss? Or just kind of like...
Sure. The first step in the process is to... We all know that the father's policy provides coverage, first of all. That's the first policy that provides coverage because the son was a permissive user of his dad's truck. So now the issue is there another policy so that we now have two or more policies? Now we look at his personal automobile policy. And using the three-step process that I set forth before, the first step is to look at the policy to determine if there's a grant of coverage. Is there a grant of coverage under the policy? And in fact, there is. And we've set forth the language of the American Family Policy in our initial brief. And the American Family Policy provides coverage to Mr. Johnson while driving a car. So under the grant of coverage, the broad grant of coverage, the liability coverage is not tethered to the car that's in the declarations page. That's why, for instance, if a person goes and rents a car from Enterprise or Hertz, they always want you to take out their insurance and you pay the money. But you don't have to, and your agent will tell you you don't have to, because your policy gives you liability coverage. It goes with you while driving another car under the grant of coverage. Only after you've determined that there is a grant of coverage do you get to the issue of the exclusion and whether that takes away that broad grant of coverage. And we submit that the Court of Appeals in this case erred because before even turning to 631.43, they gave effect to the very exclusion that was being challenged as being violative of the statute. They assumed the validity of the regular use exclusion. And that's
clear. Well, that's that part of your argument that I don't understand and I need help with.
That's where I was.
Okay, sure. And I'll do my part, I will hope to make it clear. If we look at this court's prior decisions as well as the Court of Appeals prior decisions, and starting with Welch, then the Rohde case, I may be doing these not in chronological order, but the Parks case, the Petra case, the Link case, those cases all involved situations where there was a drive of the car exclusion, essentially a regular use exclusion that the insurance company was trying to rely upon.
Hold it. Essentially a regular use exclusion. My recollection of all of those cases that you just cited were not regular use exclusion cases, but were cases that involved owned vehicles. I mean, like the Welsh case was an owned vehicle in the same household. It had nothing to do with a regular use exclusion.
What I'm suggesting, Your Honor, is that in essence, they are very similar type of exclusions. They're trying to limit coverage to one car at a time. If you're a household with multiple cars, and they're all insured, those type of provisions are trying to limit you to the coverage on one car. So in essence, they have the same effect. In fact, there was one case, and I might be able to find the citation, where either this court or the Court of Appeals, in a footnote, I believe, indicated that they're functionally the same.
Do you have any case to cite for not similar or C or... But any case to cite that says that the regular use exclusion is the other car?
I'm sorry, that a regular use exclusion
is a, looking for the words of the statute.
Is another insurance provision within the meaning of the statute? Sure. Let me direct your attention, if I can, to the... This is, I don't know if it's Petraw or Petraw, Petraw versus American Family, 185 Wiss Second, 757. That's a Court of Appeals decision from 1994. We did cite that case in our reply brief. That's an interesting case because, and that gets to the issue of putting the cart before the horse. Here's a quote from the case.
Does that case, because I notice in your case, your brief in chief, that for the premise that a regular use exclusion is an other insurance provision, you don't cite any case on point.
I would cite you to Petraw. I would also cite you to your case or your decision in Welch v. State Farm, 122 Wiss Second, 172, 1985. Since that was your case, let me start there and then get to the Court of Appeals case. Here's a quote from...
Probably one of my relatives.
This is a direct quote from your decision in Welch. Upon examination, we perceive no difference in principle or application between the, quote, other automobile insurance in the company reducing clause and validated in Tatonin and the drive other car exclusion presently before this court. That's at page 177. I think that answers your question. This court said that we see no difference between an other insurance provision that was involved in Tatonin and a drive other car exclusion, which was before the court in
with
Welch.
Did that case stand for the premise that a regular use exclusion constitutes other insurance provision?
No, that involved an other insurance provision. I'm not intimately familiar with that case, but that was a case that kind of started it all. But in Tatonin, the insurance company was not relying upon a regular use exclusion. They were relying upon an other insurance provision. And this court invalidated that under 631.43. Then comes Welch. And Welch involved a drive other car exclusion, not an other insurance provision. And this court, as I quoted, said there's no difference between the two. They both are subject to 631.43. So I would submit to you that that answers the question, and it is, and this court has said that regular use exclusions do fall under 631.43. And it's not only this court's language in Welch, but it's the fact that every case that's come down since Welch, the Parks case, the Court of Appeals decision from 1987, the Rohde case from 1993, the Link case from 1994, the Petraw case from 1994, and every one of those cases, the court dealt with a drive other car exclusion and invalidated it under 631.43.
But counsel, aren't most of those cases, Welch, Parks, Rohde, Schultz, State Farm, now all presumptively abrogated by the 1995 Act?
They sure are. In most situations, they are. The statute, because of the 1995 changes, it has so many exceptions that we could, I guess, argue about whether the exception has swallowed the rule. But the statute is still on the books. There is no a statute that specifically allows the regular use exclusion being invoked by American Family in this case. Your Honors know from our briefs, as well as American Family's brief, that they can see that because we're talking about disparate households here, the father and son didn't live in the same household, that under 632.325J, which was enacted in 95, this is not, their regular use exclusion is broader than the statute. But to answer your question, even though these cases may have been abrogated and overruled by the legislature, does not change this court's analysis, and it doesn't change the fact that in every one of those cases I cited to you, regular use or drive other car exclusions were held to be within the purview of 631.43.
Were those really regular use exclusions or pure, quote-unquote, drive other car exclusions?
Yeah, as I said before, whether it was this court or the Court of Appeals, someone had indicated that for all practical purposes, they are the same. And those terms have been used interchangeably in the case law. But I think if you look at most of those cases, they do talk about it being a drive other car exclusion.
That and those exclusions did not speak to issues of regular use.
I disagree respectfully. As I indicated, this court or the Court of Appeals has indicated that they are basically the same, a regular use exclusion and a drive-by-the car exclusion. They're just different terms, but they accomplish the same thing. The fourth reason, as I started off before, the fourth way in which the Court of Appeals erred, we submit, is because the very purpose of regular use exclusions, which this court has commented on many times, in the Agnew case, for instance, the very purpose of a regular use exclusion is to prevent a household from having a fleet of vehicles, only taking out coverage on one of them, only paying a premium on one of them, but then resting safe in the knowledge that, hey, if we get into an accident involving any of them, we're covered. And that's not the situation here. This is not a situation where someone is trying to get something for nothing. There were two policies purchased, two premiums paid for that coverage. The American Family paid out under the one policy, and they don't want to pay out under the other one. And so this is not even the situation that regular use exclusions are designed to prevent. I'd like to go through this step by step. I want to come back to this point, the first point, about how the Court of Appeals put the cart before the horse. In all of these cases, the Welch case, the Patra case, the Parks case, the Rohde case, the Link case, in all of those cases, the Court of Appeals and this court invalidated these drive-by-the car exclusions under 631.43. Now, if the Court of Appeals analysis in this case were the proper one, all of those decisions were wrongly decided, and this is why. If you can give effect to the driver of the car exclusion from the onset, then you would come to the conclusion as a court that we don't have two or more policies here that are indemnifying against the same loss. This policy may provide coverage, but this one only provides coverage to you if you're not occupying or driving a vehicle that's made available for your regular use. So now we get to the statute. Well, we don't have two or more policies, therefore the statute is not even implicated. That's what the court did in this case. But that is not the right analysis. If that were the right analysis, then Rohde was wrong, Welch was wrong, Link was wrong, Patra was wrong. In those cases, the court should never have got to that point. They would have come into 631.43, and they would have said, giving effect to the exclusion, there aren't two or more policies here, therefore the statute doesn't apply.
I'm sorry to belabor this point, but I have to go back to the contention that you are repeatedly making, and you continue to make it in this argument that you've just launched into now, that the case law stands for the proposition that a regular use exclusion is the same as a drive other car exclusion.
I have all the cases here. Let me take a minute, and I'll see if I can find that.
Because if you're referring to Welch, that's not what Welch says. I've just pulled the language. Welch says that, quote, we perceive no difference in principle or application between the other automobile insurance reducing clause invalidated in Tatinen, T-A-H-T-I-N-E-N, and the drive other car exclusion presently before the court.
I agree it doesn't answer your question, but I was asked a different question. I was asked if there's a case that says that a regular use exclusion is a, quote, other insurance provision, as that term is defined in the statute. That's why I cited Welch. I think Welch answers that question.
Welch doesn't involve a regular use exclusion, and it doesn't stand for the proposition that a regular use exclusion is an other insurance provision or a drive other car provision, so far as I can tell. unless there's something that I'm missing, and I'd be happy to be along.
I would be happy to take some time and find that site. Since my yellow light is not even on yet, I would have ample time that would appear.
Welch was a UIM, one or the other, case involving an exclusion, a drive other car exclusion, not a regular use exclusion, not an other insurance exclusion. The issue in this case is a liability policy, not a UIM or UM policy, and it's the construction of its regular use exclusion, not a drive other car exclusion or an other insurance exclusion. The policy contains an other insurance provision, which it seems to me could be analyzed under the statute 63143 for compliance, but I think as a threshold matter, there is the issue of whether a quote-unquote regular use exclusion is a quote-unquote other insurance provision for purposes of even looking at 63143 in the first instance to determine whether we have two policies that cover the same loss.
Unfortunately, I don't have the benefit of having my Court of Appeals brief with me. I know that in my Court of Appeals brief, I did touch on that. Perhaps if I could see a copy of that during the my opposing counsel's argument, I could then be able to address that issue in my remaining time.
Well, counsel, in Agnew, wasn't the assumption made that it was other insurance under the statute? Court went to a lot of trouble to get it out of the statute and dealt with that provision.
Well, I know that, Your Honor, to answer your question partly, I know that in Agnew, the court referred to it both as a regular use exclusion and a drive other car exclusion.
It was, in that instance, a drive other car and by a regular use by a resident in the household. That was, as I remember the facts in Agnew, it was a car driven, owned by the father and driven by the son.
That is right. Those are the facts of the case.
And he resided in the policyholder's household. There was a drive other car provision, which was the standard one, as I understand it. And then there was a second clause in the American Family in Agnew, which is referred to here as a, quote, other insurance provision, because that's probably the way it was referred to in the briefs, which appears in each policy and reads as follows. The total limit of our liability to you under all the policies issued to you by us shall not exceed the highest limit of liability under any one policy. We never got to that second issue.
I'm sorry.
We never got to the second issue in Agnew.
No, you're right, because in that case,
everybody assumed it fell within
right.
That statute.
I think we're getting hung up, with all due respect, on labels. The point of 631.43 is that if you have two policies that have a grant of coverage, so now there are two policies that are covering the same loss, you can't give effect to an exclusion, whether it be it doesn't matter what kind of an exclusion, whether it's an anti-stacking provision, whether it's a drive other car exclusion, whether it's a regular use exclusion, any insurance provision that would purport to take away the aggregate coverage is null and void.
That's not what the statute says. The statute says no, quote, other insurance, close quote, provisions of the policy may reduce the aggregate protection.
I would like to read to the court an answer to that question from the court's decision in – This would be the Petraw case of the Court of Appeals. And that case really didn't even involve an exclusion at all. It involved a definition of an underinsured motorist. So the court was not dealing with an other insurance provision. It was dealing with a definition. And here, this is what American Family's argument was, and this is how the court dealt with it. Quote, American Family contends that 631.43 does not apply because due to the exclusion, Petraw is not an insured. Although we agree that the policy language suggests that Petraw is not covered by the policy, the history behind the purpose of 631.43 requires that the exclusion be held invalid. To conclude otherwise would provide insurance companies with a simple way to circumvent the consequences of Section 631.43. We refuse to do so.
Similarly, that's in the context of the Court of Appeals construing a UIM policy, which by definition is excess, in other words, quote-unquote, other insurance. Here we have a liability policy.
Well, here's the analogy. If I am driving someone else's car... Oh, I have to stop. I see my time is up.
Okay.
May I finish this point? If I'm driving someone else's car that's made available for my regular and frequent use, and I'm involved in an accident, and the person who caused it, fortunately not me, is uninsured, the law is crystal clear that I get uninsured motorist coverage under the host driver, my friend's policy. That's black letter law. If I also have my own car that's insured, even though I'm not driving that at the time, and my friend's uninsured motorist coverage is not enough to pay me and make me whole for my injuries, the law is also crystal clear that I'm entitled to get excess UM coverage under my own policy. The only distinction we're talking about here, which I submit is this distinction without any legal significance, is that instead of me being the one that was hurt through someone else's fault, let's say I'm driving a friend's car and it's my fault. I get his coverage to protect me. What if his liability coverage is not enough to cover me for all the damages that I've caused? I have my own policy that provides liability coverage. But unlike the UM situation, American Family in this case, and the Court of Appeals would say, you don't get excess liability coverage under your policy. Too bad, so sad. And I submit that that's a distinction without any legal significance, and it's a distinction that's not allowed under 631.43. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Wirth, representing American Family Mutual Insurance Company.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And may it please the court, I'm Michael Wirth. I'm the attorney here for the respondent, American Family Mutual Insurance Company. And I'd like to start off by saying that there are a number of things with which I agree. That counsel just told you and talked about, there are a number of things with which I obviously disagree. I agree that this case rises and falls with Wisconsin Statute Section 631.43 in a number of respects. First, the issue is whether the regular use exclusion that we're talking about in a liability policy is an other insurance provision. Second, if it is an other insurance provision, does it promise to indemnify against the same loss as a liability policy insuring, on the one hand, a non-owned but regularly used car, and on the other, a person's own car? We have stated, we being American Family, have stated a number of times in our briefs that we believe the plaintiffs, the Martins, the petitioners, I should say, are asking this court to do something that this court has never done before. This court has never invalidated a regular use exclusion like this in the liability portion of a policy. The question, obviously, begged is why? Why has that never been disallowed? The answer has to do as much with the history of 631.43 as anything else. 631.43, the case law says, was designed to prevent insurance companies from in turn, preventing their insureds from stacking UIM and UM policies, that is, indemnity policies. There is no question, or very little question, that competing UIM and UM endorsements to policies promise to indemnify an insured against the same loss. That is not the case with liability policies, and that's certainly not the case here. We have two policies here, each indemnifying or each promising to provide liability coverage for two distinct risks of loss. The risk of loss insured against in Henry Johnson, the father's policy, is the risk associated with a permissive user using his van. The risk associated with the son, Eric Johnson, is those risks associated with somebody driving his van or he driving a van that he does not own but that is not available for his regular use. Those are two distinct types of loss. For that reason alone, I believe that Section 631.43 of the statutes does not touch this exclusion.
Counsel? Both sides agree, and I think the Court of Appeals majority and dissent emphasize that the pivotal issue, and I think that's from either the majority or dissent, they all agree, is the definition of, I think it is same loss under the statute.
Right.
So if that's the pivotal issue, the pivotal question or the threshold question, I think the issue is framed, at least in the briefs, and this is your brief, that is a regular use exclusion in the liability portion of an automobile insurance policy valid? Or, I guess I would add, or does the statute make it invalid and unenforceable? Do you understand what I'm saying right now? I was searching for the statute number. What is it?
631.43.
So that's what the issue is, right?
I agree.
Okay. Does 631.43 invalidate a regular use exclusion? Is that the issue?
Sure.
And the threshold question looking at 631.43 is whether or not this is the same loss that's covered. That's the first phrase, and you have to determine whether it's the first, it's the same loss.
Sure.
Do you agree with that?
I agree.
Then why are you putting before that in your analysis as you began to argue the question of whether or not a regular use exclusion is an other insurance provision? Why don't you just go to the first part of 631.43 and address what the Court of Appeals majority in dissent agree is the threshold question?
Well, if I didn't do that, then I misspoke. I do agree that the threshold issue is whether this is the same loss. And again, my argument is that it is not. These are two policies that, because they are liability policies, and each providing liability coverage under different circumstances, they are not covering the same loss. The other insurance argument doesn't come into play until we decide to argue for the sake of arguing that these are the same loss. Under neither threshold can this argument pass muster.
That's what I understood in your, really in your brief and mm-hmm. arguments, but today you seem to be laying it out differently.
No. I think the first issue of importance is that same loss argument. And again, the loss that covers Henry Johnson's policy are losses, the risk of loss associated with somebody driving his car with his permission. The risk associated, and when I say risk, I mean the courts use the phrase risk of loss to mean the same thing as the same loss. The risk of loss associated with Eric Johnson's policy are the risks associated with driving that van and risks associated with him driving a non-owned vehicle not available for his regular use. It is, to me, as clear as the Court of Appeals made it.
Where do you get that his driving a non-owned vehicle not for his regular use?
I'm sorry, where do I get that?
Where do you get that from? Well, I would have said that the risk of loss on that was his driving any other vehicle that he has the permission to drive.
Well, I think it is axiomatic now that a person driving another's car with that person's permission is allowed coverage under either of the policies.
That's right.
I also think, and what's important for the understanding of this case, I think, is that exclusions like this regular use exclusion, help, the courts have referred to it as helping define the scope of coverage.
Well, isn't that putting the cart before the horse, as your opposing counsel would say?
I don't think so. I think the cart before the horse argument ignores what I think are the most fundamental principles of contract law in general and insurance law in particular.
If we define the loss the way you do, then you come to the conclusion that there are two different losses and it's not covered by the statute. But that's putting into effect the drive other car provision.
Because I think the drive other car provision, and this is a two-step analysis, I think, because the drive other car exclusion is a part of the policy, we can't look at that exclusion as though in a vacuum. We can't look at the other parts of the policy as though this exclusion doesn't exist. And in addition to that, I'm going to butcher this name. I think it's Hochertel, Hochgurtel court, defined what a risk of loss is. And that court said that the greatly added risk, which is the multiplicity of potential liability situations, not people driving cars, not cars themselves, but liability situations where a non-owned vehicle is regularly used or available for regular use. That's the risk of loss. And that is why when we look at the entire scope of coverage, we have to include that regular use exclusion before we compare it to another policy.
Well, then, when does 631.43 ever apply? Well, let me put it differently. It would apply, 631.43 never applies in a drive the other car.
I think 630.
Exclusion.
I think 630.
That's not what Agnew says. Go ahead.
I think 631.43 does not apply to liability policies. Let me start over. 631.43 does not apply to regular use exclusions and liability policies. I've made my opinion clear on that. I think 631.43 will always apply or will always have to be looked to in cases of indemnity contracts, that is UM and UIM, because in that case, there is no question that we are looking at the same loss, that is loss associated with accidents involving an uninsured driver or the loss associated with accidents with underinsured drivers.
You think we have to overrule Agnew then?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
Well, it's a drive of a car and it's not UIM and it's not UM.
I don't think those are the only circumstances, but you asked when will it be, as an example, when we're talking about indemnity contracts that promise to indemnify against the same loss. And in Agnew's case, I think that the policies talked about in Agnew did promise to indemnify against the same loss because they dealt only with non-owned cars in Agnew, rather as opposed to non-owned cars, one of which is made available for a person's regular use.
And I know there were three cars, right?
Correct.
Each one insured against driving that car, right?
Correct.
But it insured also the owner driving or a relative driving other cars.
Correct.
And the court there said that it didn't violate 631.43.1.
Correct.
I think that's a correct decision.
I do, and I think it's compatible with what I'm asking here. Because the difference there is, in this case, there's no question that we've got one car that is unowned and made available for the ostensible insurer's regular use. I think in Agnew that was not the case. Agnew, the court held that the three policies at issue did not provide multiple protections against the same risk because each followed the car to which it was attached. I think that's the key distinction in this case. And then I suppose moving on, if we'd like moving on to the other insurance, one of the problems I had with the dissent in this case is that the dissent just seemed to fly past the fact that there's no question that this is another insurance clause.
It's no question that what?
I'm sorry, that this is anything but an other insurance clause, and I respectfully disagree with Judge Shedson in that. I believe that this is not an other insurance clause. As Justice Sykes pointed out, the American Family Policy at issue includes a clause in it, a provision in it, that is referred to as an other insurance provision. There is nothing in this regular use exclusion that is contingent upon there being other insurance. It doesn't matter if the car being regularly used is insured or uninsured. The exclusion makes clear that it will apply to preclude coverage, liability coverage, if the person driving the car at the time of the accident is driving the car that is made or furnished or available for his or her regular use. It has nothing to do with other insurance. And again, going back to what Justice Sykes said a little bit ago, UIM is the typical other insurance, UIM protection. It will kick in as soon as it becomes apparent that the injured party doesn't have sufficient insurance to cover his or her injuries. There's nothing about that in this regular use exclusion. There is no talk of other insurance in this regular use exclusion. And again, if we look at 631.43, 631.43 was designed to stop insurers from precluding insurance from SPACing indemnity coverage. That is, again, UM and UIM, other insurance type of insurance. That's not what liability insurance is all about. This is not a case in which necessarily the injured party is to be left without insurance. If Henry Johnson's insurance is not sufficient, then we look to the injured plaintiff, Ms. Martin's, UIM coverage to see if that kicks in. This also is not a case in which the Johnsons are each trying to get coverage for what he paid for. I think that's the kind of the tenor of the argument that I'm getting, that Eric Johnson paid for his liability coverage, he should get it. Henry Johnson paid for his liability coverage, he should get that. Well, that's not what we have here. Eric Johnson did not pay for liability coverage that will cover him in those situations in which he is driving somebody else's car that's made available for his regular use.
Is that kind of coverage available?
I'm sorry?
Is that kind of coverage available?
I'm sure it is available, but that's an increase in risk, according to the Hodgkin court, that is deserving of an increase in premiums. He could have been named. He had the facts of this case show that Eric Johnson had almost exclusive possession of this van for over 4 months. He could have gotten himself named as an additional insured under that policy. His dad could have. Either one did. that leaves us in that kind of nebulous area that will allow an insured to pay the premium on one car, never ever use that car again, but use only a separate car, and have coverage for that car. That's the insurance company in that situation never got a chance to analyze the risk associated with that. The risk, the appellant's reply brief pointed out that what let's be realistic about this. The risk that we're talking about is the risk associated with the driver. That's not necessarily the case, and that's not what the Supreme Court has said. The Supreme Court has said that the risk that we're talking about are those situations that arise when a person has regular and, in this case, unfettered access to a car that he does not own and that the insurance company has no idea exists. That's not fair, and that is not a case of Eric Johnson not getting what he paid for. Eric Johnson will get what he pays for if he is involved in an accident involving his van or involving a car that he does not regularly use. He did not pay for coverage associated with driving a car that's made available for his regular use. So I think it's a two-step, as Justice Bradley pointed out, it's a two-step question. The first question being, is this the same loss? It is not. Henry Johnson's policy says this policy will cover anybody in terms of liability if that person is driving this truck with my permission. That's fine. Eric Johnson's policy says this policy will provide liability coverage under two situations. One, if you're driving my van. Two, if you're driving somebody else's car with that person's permission, but if that car is not made available for your regular use, that is, your de facto car. Those are two distinct losses. The Court of Appeals made that clear, and I think the Court of Appeals was right. If we disregard that for just a second, we look to see if this is an other insurance clause. It is not. There is no talk of other insurance in this regular use exclusion. And in fact, if we look I believe it was the Agnew. in terms of this argument, is this an other insurance clause or is it not? I think the Agnew case, the Agnew court went out of its way to say that these are not the same thing. The Agnew court said, we conclude that the drive other car provision is valid and enforceable. The drive other car provision was the regular use. We need not discuss the second clause, that is the, quote, other insurance clause. And again, there, the other insurance clause was an other insurance clause. It had to do with provisions dealing with insurance available under other policies.
Counsel, the court in Weimer, in a footnote, defined the other insurance provision as follows. I want to know if you agree with it, and I want you to give me examples. In footnote 4 in Weimer, an other insurance provision in an insurance policy limits the insurer's liability if other collectible insurance exists.
Sure.
That's what you think the definition of other insurance.
Yes, right. And American Family's policy contains, as I noted a minute ago, contains an other insurance provision that reads, if there is other auto liability insurance for a loss covered by this part, which it itself is an important distinction, we will pay our share according to this policy's proportion of the total of all liability limits. There is nothing like that in this drive other car, this regular use exclusion. There is nothing at all that mentions or is contingent upon or revolves around the question of whether other insurance is available. I think the reason for that is because other insurance typically is underinsured motorist insurance. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but we go back to the reason for 63143's being. That is to provide indemnification, indemnity insurance, to injured parties. We don't have that case here. This is a liability case. This is not a case in which we're looking for other insurance. We're not talking about other insurance. We're talking about an exclusion that is itself a part of the bigger policy. For those two reasons, I think, because this is, on the one hand, not the same loss for the reasons I noted a minute ago, and not incidentally because this is not an other insurance clause we're talking about, 63143 does not apply to this exclusion. The law in Wisconsin is that exclusions are presumed valid unless there is a law, presumably either case law or statutory law, that says it is invalid. We have nothing like that here. We have a history of Wisconsin case law, not one single case of which says that a regular use exclusion in the liability portion of a policy is invalid. And for that reason, I ask that this court affirm the Court of Appeals decision.
Counsel, would you address the what I'm going to say is 5J argument?
Certainly. I think the 632-32-5J argument can be addressed in two respects. One, 632-32-5J, if we look at the history of that statute, specifically deals only with, again, indemnity contracts. That is UM and UIM. It has nothing to do with liability contracts. We have a liability policy here. Secondly, 632-32-5J, arguably, is triggered under 631-43 sub 3. 631-43 sub 3 says that nothing in 631-43 sub 1 operates to prevent an insurer from including all of these different kinds of insurance provisions, including 5J. Well, we never get to that because 631-43-1 doesn't operate to preclude this exclusion. So, to recap, 631-41 may lead us to 631-43-3. 631-43-3, in turn, leads us to 632-32-5J. In this case, we never have to get to 631-43-3 because nothing about 631.43.1 operates to invalidate this. Do you want me to repeat that?
No, I got it.
Okay.
I'm tracking.
The long and the short of it, I can make this a lot easier. 632.32.5J is never triggered because the triggering event, 631.43, doesn't make that necessary. And because, like I said, 632.32.5J deals strictly, if you look at the legislative history, with UIM and UIM endorsement, or UM and UIM endorsements.
It was designed to overrule all of those cases of this
right.
court and the Court of Appeals that invalidated such provisions.
Right. 631.43 took away from insurers certain things. That is, the opportunity to prevent insureds from stacking UM and UIM limits. 632.32.5J, one of four subsections, gave some of those rights back. It's a granting statute. Certainly, I think it is topsy-turvy to argue that while regular use exclusions in the liability portion of a policy were never invalidated, what is otherwise a granting statute would operate to take that away. That's backwards. And I see I'm done ahead of time unless there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wirth.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinson.
All right. Now I can answer your question. I've taken the time. I have made this statement, and I will apologize if I created some issue that should not have been there, where I've equated regular use exclusions with drive other car exclusions. I would just direct your attention to the Agnew case, where this court termed the exclusion at issue there as a drive other car exclusion, but here's what the exclusion actually says. This coverage does not apply to bodily injury or property damage arising out of the use of any vehicle other than your insured car, which is owned by or furnished or available for regular use by you or any resident of your household. The court called it a drive of the car exclusion. You know, you can call it a regular use exclusion. That language is virtually the same as what we're talking about here, so I don't think there is a distinction. If you also take a look at the Rohde case, which was a Court of Appeals decision, they also refer to the exclusion as being a driver of the car exclusion, but if you read the actual exclusion, it says that it excludes from the definition a vehicle, quote, owned or furnished or available for regular or frequent use by you, a relative, or any other member of your household. And then it goes on to say that it's a drive of the car exclusion. So my statement about how the courts have regarded drive of the car exclusions and regular use exclusions the same, I believe that that is, in fact, the case.
My issue was whether a regular use exclusion, whether it's called a regular use exclusion or a drive of the car exclusion, is also an other insurance
sure,
exclusion.
Well, the court...
And the court just sort of assumed that it was by going ahead to interpret sure. the applicability of 631.43.
Well, this court in Welch, dealing with a driver of the car exclusion or a regular use exclusion, however you want to, whatever term you want to use, they certainly said that it was subject to 631.43. The Court of Appeals in a series of cases, the Link case, the Rohde case, the Parks case, the Petraw case, they've assumed and that a driver of the car exclusion or a regular use exclusion does fall under 631.43. And it's not hard to understand why that's the case. The courts have said that we aren't going to exalt a form over substance here. They've said that the purpose of the statute is to prevent an insurance company when multiple premiums have been paid from trying to limit you to just a single, the coverage under one of those policies. And that's why that language I quoted to you earlier from the Petra case, where it was a definition, and the court said that also involved American Family, and the court said, to conclude otherwise would provide insurance companies with a simple way to circumvent the consequences of 631.43. And that's why we said in our brief, if you're going to say that exclusions are not other insurance provisions within the meaning of the statute, then any insurance company could take a provision, cast it in terms of an exclusion, and then say, well, 631.43 doesn't apply here because we're dealing with an exclusion. We're not dealing with a, quote, other insurance provision.
Were all those other cases, I think all those other cases, with the exception of Agnew, were UIM?
Yeah, and I want to touch upon...
Which, by definition, is other insurance. I mean, it's got to be, right? UIM is a form of excess insurance.
I don't guess I see how that follows, whether it's other insurance or not. Other insurance meaning here's one policy... And here's another policy, and now you have a provision that's saying you don't get the other insurance. I mean, there were some arguments here about how 631.43, perhaps it doesn't even apply to liability insurance. But this court, a long time ago, said in Woods that, look, the statute, the application of the statute doesn't turn on these historical distinctions between indemnity coverage and liability coverage. And the court repeated that statement in the Agnew case. And in fact, I did some research, and I don't even know where this... I think it's a bogus distinction, quite honestly, to say that liability coverage is not indemnity coverage. If we look at this court's cases, and the Court of Appeals cases dealing with the duty of a liability insurance company, what are those duties? A duty to defend, and what? A duty to indemnify. How is liability coverage not indemnity coverage? If it's not indemnity coverage, then how come a liability insurance company has a duty to indemnify? Of course it's indemnity coverage. And there's nothing in the statute, in the text of 631.43, that says it doesn't apply to liability, where they're trying to limit it to UM or UIM. There's nothing in the statute that limits it. And that's why this court said in Woods, and that's why this court said in Agnew, that, look, the statute doesn't turn on these arbitrary distinctions between indemnity and liability. There was a statement here about how somehow the risk to American Family is increased because Eric Johnson is driving his dad's truck at work rather than his own van. Well, presumably, if his dad said, no, you can't use my truck to go to Menards, which is where he was going in the record when the accident happened, well, what vehicle would he have been driving? He would have been driving his van. Would the accident not have happened if he had not been driving his dad's van and instead was, or his dad's truck and instead was driving his van? I mean, how was the risk increased because he's driving? If he's not driving his car, he's still driving. He's just driving someone else's car. So how was the risk to American Family increased because he was driving his dad's truck rather than his own car? I just don't see that.
Because when the insurance policy issues a liability policy to someone who owns a single car, it assumes the risk of loss associated with the insured's use of that car or any permissive user. In addition, it assumes the risk of loss of any incidental use by the insured of a non-owned vehicle, but it doesn't take on the risk of the regular use by the insured of a vehicle, for example, in a fleet or in the line of business or in the course of a construction company, as in this case. That's a significantly different risk than insuring against the incidental use of a rental car, for example, or the incidental use of a grandmother's car.
I see that the stoplight is on, so.
I don't know if that was a question or a comment. Do you want to respond?
It's a comment that requires a response.
Okay. Well, that gets back to what we were
just
talking
about. Just say yes.
Yes. As I said at the beginning, we're going to have a friendly discussion, and it has been friendly. But no, this gets back to what we were talking about before, and this is what Justice Judson pointed out in his dissent. There is a purpose for regular use exclusions. This case is not about whether we should invalidate them across the board. No, they serve a valid public purpose and a public policy purpose. But that purpose is when the risk to them is not increased just because you happen to be driving someone else's car rather than the car you paid a premium for, because unless the laws of physics can be somehow altered, you can't drive two cars at the same time. The reason that the regular use exclusion is there, as this court said in Agnew, is because you have a family that now owns multiple vehicles. And now you have multiple people driving multiple vehicles at the same time. That does increase the risk, because now multiple cars are being driven simultaneously. That certainly increases the chances that there's going to be an accident. But when you have one insurer that has one car, but now he's driving someone else's car in place of his, the accident is still going to happen. The risk is the same whether he's driving his car or someone else's car.
You don't agree that the chances of having an accident go up if someone is regularly using another's car?
In terms of whether he would have had an accident if he'd been using his car instead? No, I don't see that.
Not if he'd been using his car instead, but if someone is regularly using somebody else's car 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, as opposed to someone who's incidentally using the grandmother's car to go get groceries every other Saturday, the risk of an accident goes up.
The risk of an accident while driving that car goes up, but the risk of having an accident at all does not go up. And when they gave someone liability coverage, they're looking at the person in terms of a driver. Does this person have multiple speeding tickets, drunk driving convictions? What kind of a driver is this person? And that risk of being in an accident, just from a generic standpoint, the risk of being in an accident, that does not go up depending upon what car you're driving. The risk of being in an accident with that other car goes up, sure. But when they took out the liability policy and gave it to him, they assessed him as a driver and they decided to give him a car or give him a policy and assess his premium primarily on what kind of a driver he was. And that's going to, he's the same driver whether he's driving his car or his dad's car. And you would think that if you're going to be driving your dad's car, maybe you'll be even more careful than if you're driving your own.
Well,
thank you.
Would your answer be different if it was Eric's son? Think back that it's Eric's son driving.
But if he's a resident of the household, then...
Eric's household, not Henry's. But he regularly uses Henry's car.
Well, then, their regular use exclusion would be allowed because it's consistent with 632.32. So under that set of circumstances, unfortunately, as much as I wouldn't like that result, that would be the result that would apply.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Thank you, Mr. Burke, for arguing this case today and arguing it well. That concludes our hearing in 00-234.